builders, I think, were struggling kind of in the beginning of the pandemic, but prices have come up quite a lot, to accommodate the higher interest rates and the cost, right? I mean, like you look at townhouses, that 4 or 5 years ago used to be 400 new build, now they're, in the sixes and sevens, some of them, right? So prices have come up quite a bit. So it's a little bit surprising to see that. And also with, I think we still have a pretty large shortage of homes looming. And I think once the rates start coming down, it's going to get a lot worse. I think a lot more people are going to start jumping back into the market as those rates decrease.
You're listening to the Ottawa Real Estate Podcast with your hosts, Paul Stevenson, David Warren, and Greg Campbell. Let's see what's going on in the world of real estate today.
Hello, welcome to the Ottawa Real Estate Podcast, your go-to source for all things related to the dynamic and ever-evolving real estate landscape in Ottawa. I'm your host, Paul Stevenson. I'm joined, as always, by my esteemed co-hosts, David Warren and Greg Campbell. In today's episode, we have a special treat for our listeners as we're joined by a distinguished guest, Luca Merrick, partner of Greg's. Luca brings a wealth of expertise and insight into the realm of real estate, particularly within the Ottawa market. With his unique perspective and extensive experience, we're in for an engaging and enlightening discussion. Whether you're a seasoned investor, a first-time homebuyer, or simply interested in staying informed about the latest trends and developments in Ottawa's real estate scene, you've come to the right place. So sit back, relax, and let's dive deep into the world of Ottawa real estate with our expert panel. Welcome to the show, Luca.
Thank you.
You sure it wasn't delve? Did you change the wording on that from dive to
delving? No, they know. They heard us. They know that
they're learning. AI's learning.
Now they're starting to deep dive.
Damn it.
Deep dive. Yeah, it's true. They probably are learning that delve, it was just the word that only existed when they started, when AI started. Now everyone's over delving. They need to dive in.
They need to surface, dive too deep.
How was
guys? Like, I gotta say, I'm seeing myself on the camera. I'm loving the look. I feel like I'm back in the studio mode. It looks good. It sounds better in here. All our listeners can enjoy my voice more every day. Okay. Let's get into real estate. Or do you guys want to talk about the weekend? What do you want to do today? We got a lot of topics.
Let's talk about the weekend in real estate. How was your weekend? What did you guys do? You had an epic showing out in Elmont over the weekend. I think that was Friday, maybe.
Oh, that was on Thursday. Yeah. That was pretty nice.
What was that about? What's happening?
It was a friend of ours, Will Boje. He had a listing at 7 Mill Street. If anyone's familiar with Elmont, they know Joe's Italian Kitchen. Amazing food, amazing pizza. It's in one of the units in that old historical building looking over the falls. Mm-hmm. Super cool unit. They don't have a price on it yet, but it's incredible. Call us if you want any information.
So is it the whole building or is it just one?
It's just one unit. There's multiple units in there. I think there's
16 units.
16, okay.
And that back patio that you were elegantly displaying, is that a shared common space?
Shared. It's shared between four of the units.
Okay.
Yeah.
You got to like those neighbors,
Out there like
your sun
neighbors
in the summer.
Yeah.
Get your tanning oil on,
And then someone just opens the door.
Johnny and his little yappy dog come out and start. Yeah, it's interesting. Those properties are very unique, in those small towns. Like I know Tarleton Place too, Dave. We have our friend that opened the, really upscale kind of coffee shop right on the main drag. And in those
Foundry Coffee.
So a lot of those smaller towns are really kind of getting those facelifts. Smiths Falls had a huge facelift with Tweed going in there. What was it, 10 years ago? It was a huge uptick in people moving to Smiths Falls. But yeah, that's really neat. Elmont's a cool little town. If you haven't been there, it's worth the day trip just to go
it
and
is,
check out.
Definitely. Elmont and Empire. Yes. I like both those places. Yeah, but other than that, pretty chill. I actually had the quietest weekend I've had in a few weeks, so it was nice. Yeah,
I'm getting the feeling from talking to yourself, Greg, and other realtors that the market is certainly picking up. More people getting callings for listings, more people out shopping, more showings. You guys, like, I know you're seeing the same thing. What are you seeing, Luca, as far as kind of uptick in activity?
Yeah, I mean, we had a pretty busy week last week with a couple of hectic closings and stuff like that, but definitely more showings, more competition. I know a couple of weeks ago, I had some out-of-town buyers that I was showing quite a few properties to. And they had a list of about 10 that they wanted to see, and about four sold within the week of them coming to Ottawa to see them from Toronto. Then a couple of the other ones have sat, so it's still kind of sporadic depending on the neighborhoods, but definitely seeing an uptick in activity, and I've seen a couple of multiple offer situations on a few properties around the city in the last couple of weeks.
I'm not sure how it ended up working out, but I was speaking to a realtor on Saturday that they had a listing go live, and the second 2 days after going live the next day of four showings, an offer, like day of listing, 750 townhouse in with an in-law suite, but in Center Point, and it might have gone multiples. I don't know if it was or not. There's still an open house to come on the Sunday or the Saturday, I forget. But yeah, I mean, kind of day of going live is definitely pretty multiple showings. That's for that type of price point. Was kind of nice to hear from just like a market pickup standpoint. But
it is. I mean, another example of that is we listed a condo, fully renovated, two bedroom, two bath condo, and at 554 Saint-Laurent-le-Parc. And when we listed it, you know, I mentioned the list price to a couple people, 600,000. They were kind of like, oh, that's way too high. But we got showings booked right away.
Uh-huh.
So I think that's a good sign that people will pay for, you know, the renovated unit as opposed to paying 100,000 less for the one that needs a full update.
Uh-huh.
I would say, is it safe? This is what I see, but is it safe to say that people shop in the winter and buy in the spring? You know, like there seems to be a lot more people that are seriously buying. They're not just like, oh, we're going to look at homes. Like even the people I'm talking to pre-approved, like, yeah, we're buying something in the next month, or we're buying something in 2 months. Like they have a set time period. They're more aggressively buying as opposed to we're going to start shopping sometime in October, you know?
Like, well, you know what? I'll say one thing about that. And we talked about it on the show every year at the same time. When we say come November, go shopping, best deals, great properties. Most people didn't do it. And the average price, I think, in end of November was like five, like in the like mid fives. And then now already it's up to like, I think 625, you know, as an average overall. It's crazy to see, man. The prices, like the average price has just come way back up again. And there's more competition. So I don't really know what's going to happen, but there's a lot of sales. There's a lot of activity going on. Some people missed out on deals.
There's, you know, I'm interested to see how the news cycle changes this week with the Bank of Canada has a rate announcement on Wednesday, March 6th. So with that, it's expected that they're going to hold the policy rate and bank prime, but it'll be interesting to see what news comes out of that announcement and how that affects the news cycle as far as, you know, whether it be breeding positivity or whether the Bank of Canada, the governor, like talks about rate drops later in the year, kind of what that sentiment out of that announcement comes, because that's going to play a big part into the March and April, you know, and there's obviously another announcement beginning of April. But I think how that announcement is made is going to kind of set the tone, I think, for March, because, you know, like we've talked about, a lot of it is, you know, it's psychological, you know, when people not willing to buy, look, go shopping in November, you know, for whatever reason, but it's when there's negativity in the news and things like that, people kind of shy away. But as soon as there's positive or rates drop, that, you know, everyone floods back thinking that nobody else is thinking the same thing. And so I'm kind of curious to see how Wednesday's announcement changes that.
Yeah. And the bond rates are pretty much on par from where they were last week. So it seems like there's some, you know, it's no longer, we're seeing for at least a week or so, 2 weeks, that the bond rates are actually spiking back up again sometime mid-February. And they've been consistently coming down again now, which is a good sign. And I think we talked about this last week, but there are lenders now that are in the kind of 494 range, many lenders at the 499. And I think we're going to keep seeing that drop. I know I said this, I think, in beginning of January, but I wouldn't be surprised at all if we saw 479, 474 in the next month or two, just with the way, with spring market competition, there's always kind of that race to the bottom from lenders going into the busy season, wanting to kind of secure that business and lock in those deals going into June, July, August. So I think we will see, you know, if we're at 494, it's not at all crazy to think we'll see another 15 basis point drop in the next month. I think that's very realistic. And I think that anyone who is in a fixed rate, we've talked about this before, but if you locked in a fixed rate and you close in the next 2-3 months, make sure to talk to your broker about the potential of floating that rate down. Because if you locked in at 529 or 519, you can likely get that rate dropped down to somewhere in the, you know, 5% range.
I gotta say that it doesn't blow my mind, but every single spring since I've been in this business is the same. And so many people at the end of each year think that it's not going to be the same in spring. and it's always the same.
Mm-hmm. New year, new me, Greg.
It's just so funny. All the haters, but it's like, you know, and then they get mad at us every spring. Mm-hmm. Every end of each year, they think that we don't know what we're talking about, and then every spring, they either don't comment or they comment in a way that makes no sense, you know. And then they still haven't purchased a home, which is fine, you know. But
last year,
I'm making an observation here. Yeah,
I mean, last year January, February were the lowest prices for the entire year, and then it hit that bottom and bounced back up, and it came back slightly down, but it's a much higher bottoming out, and we're basically in, you know, in that start of that upward slope again with activity and when where likelihood prices are to go, especially if when there is that expectation from the entire public and every bank and economist that the Bank of Canada will lower rates and inflation coming down, that it's just basically a foregone conclusion that the rates are going to come down and that volumes or prices are going to go up because people can qualify for more and people can then afford more. And it's just going to be, like you said, that repeating cycle for the spring.
Yeah, it always is. Go ahead. Sorry, Paul. Love you.
No, I was going to say something else that has changed recently. We talk about all these things on the show, gentlemen, but the first time home buyer incentive, if you remember this coming out, which was probably a year and a half ago, maybe 2 years, a year and a half. I don't remember the exact launch date, but I'm pretty sure we poo-pooed on it when it first came out because of the basically how it was set up. They've basically announced that it is going to be discontinued. So the original program, just as a reminder, it was basically a shared equity mortgage with the Government of Canada. So you would essentially put, you know, 5 or 10% in, and then they would contribute an additional, you know, 5% to the home. The caveat is that you would repay the incentive based on the market value at the of the home at the time of repayment, equal to that 5 or 10%. So basically, you know, you buy a home, you keep it for 5-10 years. If the property's gone up 15%, well, you owe them basically 5% of that increased value as well. So believe it or not, a lot of Canadians don't want the government to own part of their home. And there wasn't a huge uptick. They said the government offered a loan up to, let's see here, homeowners. Canada Mortgage and Housing Corp says the deadline for new or updated submissions to the program is midnight. So March 21st is basically the last time they're going to accept submissions. And they said the reason for canceling it was a low uptick. A lot of people weren't taking advantage of it. So riddle me that. Not surprising at all.
Another failed attempt. The government.
The question is, how much money was pumped into this program that there was probably very few studies done? I mean, we all work in the industry. We all knew it wasn't going to be a huge driver of anything. Like, I don't know a single person that took advantage of it. Mm-hmm. And Dave, do you? Like, do you know anyone that even
there's too many? Not in our market, because there's too many restrictions to be even able to qualify to use it in our market. Mm-hmm. From a, like, there was a cap at which you can max out at. Your household income was capped, and it was only 4 times that. So you're actually artificially restricted as far as what you were able to get as far as a loan amount. And for where our price points are, it was irrelevant in markets like ours, or, you know, a lot of the major markets. You know, I'm sure maybe some places in the prairies and East Coast might have been able to take advantage or had some use of it. But even at that, for what the stats are, there's hardly anyone that used it. So hopefully they actually allocate those funds to a program that's actually going to be used and actually services for home buyers.
I heard an interesting, actually something I want to talk about now that we remember, I talked about this midweek, didn't put it in the chat, but two things. One, I was going to say one thing I really found interesting, an interesting incentive that they've been kind of murmuring about, rumors, basically having lesser down payment for first-time buyers. So even going as low as a 0% down payment, or potentially extending the amortization to 30 or 35 years just to make it a bit more affordable. So I thought that was an interesting concept, would work 1,000 times better than this first-time homebuyer incentive. The other thing that we talk about often is the New to Canada program. And I was speaking with a lender last week, Sagen and Canada Guarantee, two of the insurers, the other two other than basically CMHC, they do allow on New to Canada mortgages now fully gifted down payments. So for anyone listening, CMHC does require you to have at least 5% of your own savings invested in the property. The other two insurers will allow 100% gifted funds. So if you're new to Canada, a lot of the times, you know, they have really good income and so on, but maybe not the savings. You can now have that down payment gifted from, again, immediate family member but it's a big incentive. So I know I've talked to a lot of people, Dave, I'm sure you're the same, people that are kind of fit into the qualifying criteria for new to Canada, but sometimes they don't have sufficient down payment. So this is a really good opportunity where they could qualify on their own, but have those gifted funds to kind of cover the down payment. So anyone who's interested in that program, reach out to Dave or myself. We can certainly go over it. But that was a surprise to me. I didn't know that that was a new, she said it was a new change that came out. Mm-hmm. I think it was in the last month, but I was unaware of that. And it's a huge opportunity for a lot of those newly immigrated people to get into a home, you know, with the proper income and the down payment now. Side note.
That's helpful for sure.
Are you thinking of buying or selling a residential property? Relationships are at the heart of every real estate transaction. At Gueltain Poirier Avocat Lawyers, we love to bring residential buyers, sellers, agents, lenders, mortgage brokers, and the law together to close the deal for you. For an effortless client experience that opens doors, call us at 613-744-4488 or visit our website at GueltainPoirierLaw.ca. Let's get to the heart of your deal.
What else do we got? Luca, I want to talk quickly about, we had a closing this week that turned into quite a nightmare, especially considering who the client was and everything that she'd been through. But it ended up working out. But I think it was just kind of like a good lesson in how to prepare your clients for what could happen at closing if you're closing on the same day and moving into a new place. And especially if your financing is a little bit, you know, needs some work and needs a strong structure on the financing side. Luca, you want to get into that a bit?
Yeah. So we had a purchase and sale kind of going through on the same day for the same client. Everything kind of seemed all right until we learned that when she got her car loan, that the car company decided to register two car loans other than one in her name. This kind of came to light pretty late to closing, and then we weren't able to meet some of the lender requirements due to, you know, the second car loan affecting the credit file and everything like that. So we were trying to get all of that type of stuff sorted. The buyer had to move into the home. We weren't able to move that closing. So we were able to close the sale of her property on the set date, but we ended up having to push her purchase by a couple of days. So we kind of had to get in touch with lawyers, get in touch with the other realtor, and, you know, just kind of sorted a couple of things. But, you know, she had movers booked and everything else like that, that then needed to be pushed for the weekend. And luckily she was able to move them to the Saturday. And this particular moving company, I guess, had free storage for basically up to 10 days of your move. So she was actually able to split the move into two chunks rather than kind of having it all done in one day. And I mean, there was a lot of moving parts on that deal kind of from the beginning. And it was just kind of one thing after the other. But ultimately, it ended up getting done. But yeah, it's things like that. And we had another client last year who had a twin. And when they registered the twin's mortgage, they also ended up registering it on our client's file as well. So, you know, it looked like she had two mortgages when she only had one, which also caused a lot of problems. But it's just pretty crazy how something like that can really, you know, affect an entire deal. And, you know, especially for somebody that doesn't use credit products very often, you know, especially retired seniors and people of that nature, you know, you're not constantly checking your credit if you're not going to be purchasing a property, or, you know, if you're not really using a credit card, right? So if you have an extra car payment that's registered that you just don't know about, or a mortgage that's sitting kind of on the back end of your file, you know, until you get on, and, you know, it's a lot of hours of phone calls with Equifax to try to get some of these things sorted, right? And they're just like, oh, you need to prove that you don't have a second car. And she's like, how do I prove something that I don't have, right? So I had to get on the phone with a lender out of Toronto and then get them to send a letter so that they could provide that to the underwriter to kind of get the file done. So it was definitely a really good learning experience and a really good reason of why you should constantly be monitoring your credit and just seeing, you know, what's registered on there, because mistakes do happen, you know, and you just need to be prepared for that.
I think it's our job now at this point, after going through that again, and it was crazy. Like everyone did work hard on that, lawyers, broker, like everybody. It was like a really good teamwork. But I think Luca and I were talking, we're building a list of things that we need to have clients kind of sign off on before they start working with us. And one of them that we're definitely going to add is please do your digging into your credit history. Like both Equifax and TransUnion, whatever it takes, just find out any little thing that's flagged on your credit before we even start. because, you know, with this, it was kind of surprising that it wasn't flagged earlier in the process, because we'd been working on it for a little while. But it's one of those things, it just showed up. So you got to make sure that everybody is, you know, on the same page, and that everybody is like fully qualified and aware of where they're at. Because, you know, this is two things that happen to us now. And that's, you know, that's too many, especially when you're, you know, when you're buying a new home and you're selling yours. It's a lot of stress already. Why add this to the mix? You know, it's easy to resolve. You're muted, Dave, somehow.
Sorry, there's some background noise. I don't know if she got a new car during the home buying process that caused it. Okay.
No, when she bought the car, they issued two loans. Like, they had recorded two loans for the same car on the same day. But she was only ever making one payment. So it's like a clerical error.
Mm-hmm.
So two things. One, you can actually, there are, I don't remember the name of the company, but David, maybe you do, but there is a company that will actually do like refinances of car loans to extend out the amortization. So if you had like 2 years left and you're paying $600 a month and you actually can't qualify now, you can re-amortize it to lower that payment to 200 or 250 or whatever. That's it is cool. And extend it to 5 or 6 years. I think I only used it once and it was many years ago. So I don't know if it still exists, but just as an idea, if something like that comes up, there are people like that out there, companies like that.
So that's, and that's a different company that would take over your current loan.
Correct.
Yeah. In this case, it's a fictitious loan, but yeah, I think to Luca's point, like using a Borrowell or Credit Karma to at least like check in on your credit every now and again is vitally important. And for brokers that might be listening, there are ways in which you can force updates with Equifax in a matter of, you know, 24 to 72 hours with proof of, you know, any sort of documentation, or, you know, and there's back channels for brokers. So a client doesn't have to spend the time on the phone with Equifax, and you can act on their behalf and force updates a lot quicker than snail mail or faxes, things like that. So for those brokers and realtors that aren't aware of this, certainly like contact or you know, the broker that you're working with, the mortgage broker, because they do have access to this. If you don't know about this, then certainly ask your broker owner how you can go about doing this, because it's about $20 per update, forced update. But if it's something where, you know, there's a fictitious loan or a mistake, or, you know, credit is low and they've paid off that credit card, it's just that it maybe is taking 2 months to reset within Equifax, showing that paid off loan, which will boost the credit. You could provide proof of that zero balance, for example, and they'll instantly bump their score, or proof that that car loan doesn't exist. It'll come off within 24 hours and repull it. So something to keep in mind if, for instance, where stuff like that comes up.
Yeah.
And the other thing I was going to say, Borrowell, like you mentioned, Dave, though, it's an amazing tool. Like my daughter, who is 23, I introduced her to it. She shared it with all her friends, and now they're like obsessed. Like it gives them like weekly updates on where your score is, if it went up, it went down, recommendations. It's a free service too. It pulls directly from TransUnion, so you can actually see like in real time. A lot of the banks have it now too. I know Scotiabank, I think RBC has it, where you can actually, within your online banking profile, you can click see my credit score, and it'll connect you directly with one of those systems. But borrowwell.ca, it's a free service, and it's a great way to track your credit score. They have an app. It's super
easy. Don't accept all the credit offers they're sending you.
Yeah, there's tons.
otherwise you'll screw yourself for later.
You got
on.
A credit card for
30%. Cards that will work for you immediately. No, easy approval.
Yeah, easy approval. 30% to pay off that 19.9%.
Okay? Yeah. I got another headline here. Everybody, you know, some people heard about that lawsuit. The new home, well, I'll just get into it. New Home Consumer Protection Agency in Ontario could face $90 million in claims as developers walk away from projects. Ontario's New Home Consumer Protection Organization, Tarion, expects to pay homebuyers over $90 million this year due to builder failures and receiverships, the largest claim event in its history. The influx in residential development projects entering receivership and builders walking away from projects is attributed to high interest rates and rising construction costs, which we always talk about. Tarion protects deposits for home purchases after January 1st, 2018, up to $60,000 for homes under $600,000 and up to $100,000 for homes over $600,000. Tarion's 2024 business plan notes the risk of builder insolvency and illegal deposit taking in the housing market. Tarion aims to mitigate future losses through homeowner education, improving its underwriting approach, and exploring process improvements. Tarion plans to work with the Home Construction Regulatory Authority, HRCA, to pursue appropriate sanctions against involved builders. Despite the large payouts, Tarion believes it will not impact its ability to respond to future warranty claims due to capital management and reinsurance programs. Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy, but I mean, you know, hearing stuff like that definitely doesn't sound too good. It's a little bit surprising as well, because you know builders, I think, were struggling kind of in the beginning of the pandemic, but prices have come up quite a lot, you know, to accommodate the higher interest rates and the cost, right? I mean, like, you look at townhouses, you know, that 4 or 5 years ago used to be 400 new build, you know, now they're, you know, in the sixes and sevens, some of them, right? So prices have come up quite a bit. So it's a little bit surprising to see that. And also with, you know, I think we still have a pretty large shortage of homes looming. And I think once the rates start coming down, it's going to get a lot worse, because I think a lot more people are going to start jumping back into the market as those rates decrease.
I think for a lot of them, it's just the upfront costs. You know, they've started a project, but there's huge permit and development fees upfront, which kill their capital on hand. And then, you know, product that they've already finished hasn't been selling, or values drop where it eats away at their margins. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, they're just not able to like finish those projects they've already started, because they're just cash strapped. And it kind of just becomes a snowball effect. It is surprising of how many in one capacity, because that's, you know, 90 million based on like 1,600,000 increments. It's obviously quite a lot of failed units. I'm curious to see though who takes over those projects as well. Like, they'll get finished, you know, if they've been started or anything like that, like some other larger company will come in and finish them. But yeah, I mean,
sorry to interrupt. You just made me remember something. I spoke with somebody last week. It was a referral for a potential listing, but he's an investor developer, but he invests in this kind of things. And he offered, I won't say the name of the builder, but he offered to take over 40 of their townhomes. Like, he was going to give them the money that they needed and take over the project and finish it, but they refused. So I guess what he was offering was too low, but he's like, that's what I've been doing lately. He's like, I've been going in and getting these deals from the builders to finish the project, but he's obviously, you know, going in with a lower price, trying to get a deal on it and flip them. But just the fact that there are people out there, and like you said, these builds are going to get finished. It's just a matter of who takes over the project, how it works, or or where they get the money from to finish it, right? And how much debt they need to accomplish that.
I mean, really, from a math like standpoint, at 100,000 max, basically 900 units that were started and not finished at 90 million, capping out at 100,000 in deposits, just from like if capping. So if that's, you know, that's Ontario based, that's quite a few units that need to be finished.
Yeah. A lot of homes, and we need more homes.
Well, if it's a lower price point too, right, you'd be looking at that number, you know, potentially double or triple, you know, so if they're like $300,000, you know, $400,000 or $500,000 homes, you know, they're only protected up to half of that amount, right? So it'd potentially be double the amount of units, or, you know, like 100, you know, the full insurance amount. So, I mean, look at our average of 500-600, so it'd probably be about 1,800 units if you look at it that way, which is a pretty large number.
And speaking of values, there was a CTV article over the weekend that only 19%, MPAC came out, that only 19% of all properties in Ottawa are under 500,000. So from that, obviously, Tarion's Ontario-wide, but I guess as of the latest update, there's only less than one-fifth of the properties in Ottawa are under 500,000, which is...
Now, is that freehold, or that includes condos, or that's just freehold, you know?
So home values between 500 and 750 now account for the largest proportion of real estate in Ottawa. Between 500 and 750 account for 43.2% of Ottawa properties, while only 19% are valued under 500. I assume that this is as an aggregate of condo and freehold.
Yeah, I guess when you think about it, like even like we were saying, even like a, you know, a starter 3-bedroom row townhome now are still in the high threes, low fours. So that's offsetting like a, you know, the average single family at 700, that seems reasonable.
So it says that in 2013, 79% of homes in Ottawa were under 500,000. So 11 years ago in 2013. Wow. So 11 years ago, 79% were under 500,000, and now we're at 19.2.
That's a crazy 60% swing in the span of 11 years.
Yeah.
That's wild. Yeah, a lot of that was probably like 2018 to 2021.
Oh, yeah, for sure it was.
Yeah.
Just speaking on numbers, I got a kind of an average here of stats, not into too much detail, but, you know, if you're looking in Orleans right now, the average sales price of a home is around the mid sevens, but the average list price is still in the low nines, many days on market for those. So there's more coming out that are better priced, but there's still a lot of sellers fighting for that top dollar, 900 plus.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's interesting to see.
Yeah, there's even in my area, though, there were some properties that had been sitting for a while that are finally come off the market as well, that were in that like higher price point, you know, and needed work and were sitting for a while, which I think was kind of interesting to see as well. Because, yeah, just to that point of like people just sitting for an extended period of time looking for that top price, but obviously more people coming back out. The nicer weather drives that too.
Oh, yeah, and we're lucky. The weather's been great. I think this is probably the earliest the snow's been gone in like 20 years.
Yeah.
It's insane. I went for a run in shorts yesterday outside. and was comfortable. It wasn't like I was like trying to be hard, you know. I wasn't pulling out David Goggins. I was literally just trying to
go hard, Paul. Go hard.
Who's gonna carry the boats? Gentlemen, should we move into some mood boosts?
Let's do it.
Great show. Thank you, Luca, for being here with us.
No, it's a pleasure. As always.
Number one, I once got fired from a canned juice company. Apparently, I couldn't concentrate. Yes. Number two, you guys know I like reading. I'm reading a horror book in Braille. Something bad is going to happen. I can feel it.
That's good.
Number three.
For the win.
Within minutes, the detectives knew what the murder weapon was. It was a briefcase.
Bangers.
Yes, bangers.
bangers today.
March 6th. So tomorrow, when this comes out, being Tuesday, tomorrow, March 6th, Bank of Canada rate announcement. This show tomorrow. Well, the show's going to come out on the 5th. The announcement's on the 6th.
Wow.
Steven's throwing dates in the chat, so I'm confused. Today's the 4th. Tomorrow's the 5th. When it comes out, the announcement's on the 6th. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. We'll be back next week. We can just cut out this whole section. thanks for tuning in. We'll be back next week.
Bye now.
On the Ottawa Real Estate Podcast. Have a great week, everyone.
We're good. We're amazing. Yay.
's for tuning in, everyone. We hope you enjoyed today's episode. Please remember to like, share, comment, and subscribe, because we'd really like that.